Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome, dear listener, to another episode, the second episode in season 5 of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Brant, and joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good evening, Mr. Joe.
Good evening, Mr. Matt. Good evening, dear listener. Welcome. Welcome to the podcast. We're well into the throes of season 5 now, and NAMM's around the corner, so
you know, good times. It was Blue Monday recently.
Right? So, is that a thing?
It's the saddest day of the year. That's what everyone says. Mm. And I actually think today, we are recording it on a Monday, the week after the previous Blue Monday. It's the saddest day because everyone I know is going to NAMM. And I will not be there. No. You know, I was talking to Blake. I was talking to Philip. I was talking to Ryan at 60 Cycle, all the chums. And I won't be there. And everyone was crying. There was shouting in the streets. It's unbelievable. But yeah, no, I'm not going to be there. And believe it or not, I think this year, Joe, and I'm sure you probably feel the same, this year feels like the year everyone is back. Like yeah. It feels the year like everyone's going. It's like going to be the biggest party and I'm not invited.
It came out of nowhere, though. It came really late. I feel like everyone, all the companies that I work for were like, yeah, maybe we'll do it. And it was only like a couple of months ago that people started going, yes, we're actually going to go. And there was, to be fair, like I said, I spoke about this last week, but NAMM is always going to clash with my girlfriend Emma's birthday. And so I'm very, very rarely ever going to go to it. I just want the Nashville one back. I want that one to come back, the summer one. The good thing is, for me, is that everyone's going to NAMM. So all the companies that I work for, the various companies that I offer marketing, they've all buggered off to NAMM. So I can do whatever I want now. I hope they don't watch this or listen to this.
I genuinely think this year compared to others feels like it's been really heavy on NAMM launches. A lot of big companies have really been coming out the gates with a lot of launches.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to be going this year. Everyone I know who hasn't been before is going. Friends that I know who work in the industry have never been before are going. And I'm like, oh. And it's like, you know, England's cold, it's stormy. I'm like, this is like the perfect time to go to LA, queue up for an hour to have a really bad, expensive slice of pizza in the food court, sit outside that fountain, soaking up the sun in the 5 minutes you have in between shouting at people on a booth because it's too loud. We love it and we do it.
I really wish it was somewhere else in the world other than California. I can really take or leave that area. It's too warm and plasticky.
It's very weird because for people who haven't been, or for new listeners who have no idea what NAMM is, the annual convention, it's like Comic-Con for musicians, in Anaheim, California. But Anaheim was built for Disneyland, so effectively
North American Music Meet.
The National Association of Music Merchants.
Oh, is that what it is? There you go.
I mean, you know, it's been going since 1929 or something, I think.
That's ridiculous. Yeah,
I know, absolutely crazy. But it's been held in Anaheim for many, many years, like 30 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, Anaheim's just a bit weird. It's built for Disneyland. It's very family orientated. People only go there for the convention center.
Yeah. It's also the home, as a big Star Trek fan, Matt, it is also the home of Starfleet in the Picard series.
It's very true.
On Paramount. It is the building that they use to pretend it's a futuristic building where Starfleet are based. So, you know, it's not bad.
Yeah. I actually got a little bit of history wrong there, Joe. It was inaugurated in 1902, 122 years ago,
that's ridiculous.
If you can believe it. Although
I wonder what Fender had out that year.
Yeah, I think actually at that point it was NAPTA, the National Piano of Manufacturers Association of America. Wow. It became NAM in 1920. So it was basically basically an event to convince piano merchants to produce full lines of band instruments. So very much a kind of big band show. I guess that was obviously what was popular at the time. The guitar didn't even exist in the form that we know and love today. It became the kind of international music and sound expo as we know it in 1976. And then the NAM show, as we now call it, in 2003.
Wow.
And it's been in Anaheim since 2003. If not slightly before. But yeah, so there you go. That's a little bit of history of NAM. It is absolutely bonkers. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
Absolutely. Well, if you haven't guessed, dear listener, this week's episode, episode 2 in season 5, is called New for NAM 2024, part 1. I'm calling it part 1 because I'm sure next week Matt and I are going to have more things to talk about that have been released. But yes, this is New for NAM 2024, part 1. This week's podcast, it's worth mentioning, is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings and also Isotope and Native Instrument Plugins. The big news, I guess, for NAM, the big things that we've heard about that are the new releases are the big three have, I'm going with big three and I'm throwing PRS in there. So the big three have made their announcements, Gibson, Fender, PRS. They've announced some of their new stuff. Obviously, Fender aren't there, but they've announced their new stuff that's happening. So, you know, it's still like a NAM release in that sense.
I think I was going to say, it feels like, and I kind of get it, that the bigger companies come out of the gates early because they can afford the marketing and press. And they get their releases out early and they kind of want people, I guess dealers, you know, NAM is traditionally a dealer event, people to know what's coming so they can start listing it on their website now. And then everything else kind of tumbles out at NAM, but obviously it becomes very noisy, very hectic.
Yeah.
So, you know, the guys like Fender, Gibson, they always come out of the gates pretty early on that sort of stuff.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So we're gonna take a little bit of a look at those things, the Gibson, the Fender, the PRS releases, maybe squeezing Gretsch and Charvel. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how time goes. Also, if you did check it out, dear listener, recently on the Guitar Nerds Instagram, I posted a picture of me carrying an absolutely hench bundle of effects pedals because I just got sent an awful lot of effects. And so we're going to talk about some of the awesome things that I've picked up. And that's actually also where the sound sample is coming from this week. So we're going to have a little look at those. And we're going to be talking about maybe some of the other, maybe I'll squeeze in some of the new release, break a couple of embargoes from Ashdown and KMA Machines as well and let you know some secrets there.
Nice. There was something actually we didn't put on here, Joe. If we get time, I want to talk about it, but I won't say it now in case people go, I'm going to wait for that, and then we don't talk about it. So I'll put it on the
okay.
list.
Okay, cool.
Where are we going to start, Joe?
I don't know, Matt. Fender or Gibson? Should we start with Gibson? Gibson, I feel like this is the big one for me. This is the NAM 2024. This is what people are going to come away saying. That was NAM 2024. It was the year that Gibson brought amps back. Because I think that is a massive... We knew something. We hoped something was going to happen after the Gibson Mesa Boogie acquisition. Mm. But of course, Gibson have bought lots of companies before. And, you know, I mean... Did they buy Tascam for a while? And the Tascam Orange 335 was all we got from that.
Yeah. And then we had the, they owned Cakewalk. Like Wurlitzer at one point. It's like, you're not really going to see much of that. I think they own Onkyo, the like turntable company. Obviously, they own KRK now as well.
still own KRK? I thought they offloaded
According
them.
To their website, they still own KRK.
They owned that microphone brand that we actually started the podcast using, Matt, those Bumblebee mics.
Oh, yeah.
That was a Gibson brand.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right, Joe. I think this is the one that people have been waiting for because they bought Mesa Boogie during COVID, during lockdown, not that long ago. Maybe it was longer and time's just flown by. But, you know, I think historically, apart from Fender, a lot of big guitar companies struggle with amps because their guitars are more famous than their amplifiers. You know, so you've got like PRS and they make great amps, but people don't talk about them as much because they're always talking about the guitars. And I think historically, Gibson, the only ones that people remember are things like the GA5, which have kind of got this like legendary studio status, but they're kind of a small, crappy amplifier. And then you get things that they'll bring out, like they had those Epiphone Juniors and those Epiphone amps. So you kind of get this impression of these, like, they make amps because someone needs to play a Gibson guitar and a Gibson amp, but they're actually pretty rubbish. And this is like, well, hold on, we've got Randall Smith, possibly one of the most legendary amp designers ever, you know, Boogie, and we might as well get him to do it. So that's exactly what they've done. So these are actually these are good. I think you should say, Joe, these are actually, I mean, they're good. They're Boogie. They, you know, they're designed by Randall Smith from Boogie. So this is
they
a
look
big deal.
Fantastic. They've gone for a really great, like, just a simple, incredibly heavily classic look. Everything looks classic. The handle on top is is old school. It's like it's not padded. It's not on a little spring. It's not anything. It's just like on a sort of metal. It's like a kitchen door handle. On the top of the amp, which is great. The foot switch is just shaped aluminium, and it just looks great. It's simple, old school, very, very classic cream amplifiers with a gorgeous deep brown basket weave, which looks great. Like, you know, when I think of how when Fender put out a new amp, it's very modern. I know obviously they still do all their classic amps still. It's not, I mean, but they... There's always a little modern edge on the Fender stuff. Fender always looking forward. They're looking to make new things. And I love that Gibson looked back. I love that they made something that matches their instruments. It's very classic. I'm glad they didn't release something weird and 80s or that was just another version of Mesa Boogie. There were so many routes they could have gone down which would have been wrong. This is the right route. And best of all, the number one thing that Gibson do, they haven't done, which is made these insanely expensive. They're not cheap.
They're not cheap, but...
But they're not...
They're not as much as a Mesa Boogie in some sense. Exactly. So, yeah, I think that there's a couple of big things here. So you've got the Falcon 5 and the Falcon 20. The Falcon 5 is 7 watts. I guess 5 sounds better than 7 in a name. And the 20 is 12 watts. Again, maybe it's just a name thing. One has a 10-inch Jensen speaker. One has a 12-inch. But what you've got is basically a fairly simple amp. So volume, tone, reverb. And then you've got a tremolo as well on both,
with a depth and a frequency.
Depth and frequency, which is very cool. I think the big thing, though, is that they've taken the multi-watt power scaling from the Boogie system and put them in here. So that is not just an attenuator like a lot of other amps. It physically, what they call duo class technology, it basically changes the wiring inside to change the way the power amp works. So power amp handling is very different. It basically means that the amp responds totally different, which means you get a different feel. A lot of times when you just attenuate, you're drawing a lot of power away from the power amp and into the speakers. Dynamically makes it feel very different because they feel choked. Whereas this is like a single end. The 5 is a single-ended Class A amp that you can then kind of scale back. So there's a lot of different stuff here. I think it's really cool. I think it's a cross between the sort of more traditional Boogies and then kind of that Gibson vibe on it. It's good that they haven't just rebranded a Boogie. They've actually built an amp from the ground up. And they're going to be just looking here, $14.99 for the Falcon 5 in dollars,
US dollars.
Yeah. And $17.99 for the Falcon 20.
So I get that they're expensive, but these could have been a lot more.
But I think this is for people who love Gibson. I don't think you're going to necessarily be looking at these. You know, you've got Tone King and those kind of boutique brands, and they're kind of wedging themselves in that kind of sphere, I feel, with the kind of price and the images. But I just think if you're kind of into Gibson and kind of the other things they're doing, and certainly the other things that they're bringing out at NAMM, I think like the mod shop and stuff, it's for people who love Gibson and want Gibson stuff. First and foremost, that's my feeling on it, I think.
Sure. I think they're also probably very good, very premium sounding amplifiers.
Absolutely.
I agree they're there for Gibson fanatics, but I think they can stand, I hope they can stand on their own legs as a quality boutique amplifier for people who love kind of retro, low wattage, tremolo-y, reverb-y.
It's tricky because that market has become a lot more saturated with boutique builders making similar things. Their advantage is that many Gibson dealers will stock them, where they won't stock many other boutique brands that perhaps deal direct. So it helps them build up a bit more of a story and a reputation early on. And that's what they've got to do, really, is build up the reputation. Because a lot of the boutique brands have been building it for years and decades. And they're sort of coming out the gate. It's like, we haven't made an amp for ages, and here's an amp designed by someone really famous, which is great. Now they've just got to get people using it. And I wonder when
Gibson did last make an amp. Asking Google.
Ask ChatGPT.
Wow. You're okay there.
Rare.
Gibson abandoned amplifier production in 1967 in order to focus on guitars.
Wow.
Yeah, there we go. That's it.
Wow. I mean, they must have cost a lot of money back then. And again, it could have just been a bit of a vanity project. I don't know. But I'm interested to see where this goes. Uh-huh. I think we just need to see people using it. I think they need to get a couple of people like behind it, using it as their main thing.
That'd be great. A couple of like cool players, like maybe not Slash this time, you know, would be great for Gibson to get someone else on board.
I think they're going to go down the big retro route. I think that's the vibe they're going to go for here. So I think they're going to definitely go down the retro route.
Well, we'll see. I'm certainly very excited about it. The Falcon 5 and Falcon 20, super cool combo amps. Have a look, dear listener. Check them out when you can. Now, one of the other big brands that isn't Fender, who have launched launching something interesting, it is, of course, the internet's favorite guitar, the PRS Silver Sky, loved by bedroom guitarists everywhere.
Uh-huh. And me. Actually, I am a bedroom
guitarist. The PRS have revealed yet more new finishes, pickup specs, and weirdly, tuning buttons.
I think this explains why that Roxy Pink PRS was going so cheap,
right?
I think last week, because I think it's smart. They bring out colors for a little bit, they discontinue colors, perhaps they discontinue colors that aren't doing very well, maybe it's more strategic than that. Then those colors go up in price because people are like, I want that color. So it sort of makes sense now. So you've got two colors in the PRS Silver Sky: faded black tea.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
T as in T-E-E, like a t-shirt, I guess, which is a satin finish, and Venetian blue, which is basically, to me, looks like the Eric Clapton
Mercedes blue. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, if you love Eric Clapton and John Mayer, there you go. You can have a PRS Silver Sky in Venetian blue. I think the faded black tee looks awesome.
Because it's got the get on with satin finishes, but
I know you hate satin finishes, but I think the rosewood fingerboard as well looks really sweet on that. I think it looks cool. Look really, really cool. It's a shame they haven't making the dead spec one a standard model though.
I was gonna say the same thing. I would have loved to have seen like an onboard preamp and a hardtail maybe become like a spec that you could get. It didn't always have to be an Alembic one. They could have done their own PRS preamp in there, just something that imitates it, but you could get the price down a little bit on there. But no, it is just new finishes.
It's amazing, really, isn't it? Because who do new finishes appeal to? Because once you own one, if you're like an average guitarist, are you going to buy another one? Probably not. But if you're kind of a real big John Mayer fan, I guess then you buy lots. Or are you going to be sitting there going, I'm not going to buy one until they do this color?
Well, I think so. Yeah. I think people like a lot of the John Mayer stuff, you know, the early ones, there was that awful green. Then they did the cheap ones, which were all bad colors.
Yeah.
They've always been a really specific type of color. This is the first time we've seen, you know, a little bit more classic, a little bit more. I mean, these are both tasteful finishes rather than being a bit poppier sort of thing. So
yeah.
I guess it's
but that's not the big news though, Joe. I think the big news really is, bizarrely enough, something very small. That's the new tuning buttons.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? When I saw this press release turn up in my inbox and it said PRS Silver Sky with new tuning button, I thought they meant a button that tuned it. I was like, no,
they've bought robot tuners.
but yes, no, that's not what they mean.
So actually, these tuning buttons are on the NF3 and they're on the private stock John McLaughlin models that came out last year.
Right. Oh, really?
And,
wow.
You know, I didn't notice. You know, we call ourselves guitar nerds. I didn't notice. But they actually put out a video with Paul Reed Smith talking about them. And the interesting thing here is he talks a lot about, you know, he's the kind of people class him as like the Willy Wonka of guitars because he's just sort of mad into like all of these kind of crazy little details.
Yeah.
And he's like, basically anything that connects with the string is super important to tone. You know, if you've got a really heavy tuning button or a big tuning button, that sort of affects it in a certain way. So they wanted these kind of lighter weight, smaller tuning buttons that kind of pulled less weight off the headstock and allowed the guitar to ring more. And, you know, he talks about a lot about that. And then he's like, this was actually the original design we had in 1980. And we've only now been able to realize it properly. And they actually show a diagram from that he drew in 1980, which was 5 years before the company even formally began. And they're basically saying they're now going to appear on, I think, basically every model. And he's like, some people will love them, some people hate them, but he's like, we love them, so they're going on everything. Check the website and you'll find out. So at least for future guitar historians, it'll be easy to tell when things change, because you'll be able to go, what PRS buttons are on that? Oh yeah, that's 24 buttons. So yeah, quite interesting. I think it's nice that they're still looking back and sort of looking at those ideas and and sort of realizing them today.
Sure.
But yeah, big news. I'm sure loads of people are going to hate it. But you know, I actually think they look. I think they look quite slick. They're sort of not metal either. There.
Yeah, I took a minute to get used to them. They look oddly big and a bit basic in their shape, like a little unelegant. Actually, like having looked at them a bit, I think they're kind of cool. They fit with the PRS aesthetic.
I think so, because they're not. They're kind of almost like an ivory, like bone nut finish, aren't they? But they're obviously not that kind of material. I'm guessing they're a plastic. But I think they're nice because it matches the nut. It kind of matches the aesthetic of the wood and the kind of finishes they use. So I'm all for it.
Yeah.
PRS coming my way this year, Joe. This is what there you this, go. That's it. I've finally transitioned. It's mine now.
I would have liked some more finishes in the Silver Sky SE line. I think that's that for me. That would have been good.
I wonder if, I mean, this is all speculation, but I wonder if they've actually done very well. I guess they've probably done quite a lot, but we saw quite a lot of deals in certain colours. So probably certain colours were pretty unpopular. And I just wonder whether a lot of people are just going, I might just buy the other one. I don't know. I'm sure they've sold it.
There's a price difference between them. £2,200 for a normal one, £700 for an SE. Like that's a big price difference. That's a big reason to go for the SE. But I think they were quite careful with it. In you know, those finishes weren't very nice. They were very very basic. You know, there weren't even any metallics or anything like that. There were just some really plain colours that weren't even. You know, a PRS version of a Fender color. They were something new. They looked very simple, very Squire affinity. The finishes.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah,
exactly
it was just that. And yeah, I'm not like, I bet they're well good. I bet they are great guitars. I don't think anyone was going, yeah, what I want is, you know, like a really flat looking cream or green, you know.
I tell you what's interesting, right? Used markets always interesting for these. So you can actually buy PRS SE Silver Sky. I mean, it's a stupid comment to say. You probably haven't sold many because I think it was actually in the Reverb top 10 selling guitars thing that we talked about last year.
Yeah, but that's probably because people buy them and then sell them. There were loads in the pre-owned.
I know. So you can actually buy a new SE Silver Sky for as cheap as $589 in moon white. So retail price or RRP price of $895.
Is that pounds? Are you talking pounds?
I am talking GBP. Great, GBP. Great British pounds. you can pick them up here for as cheap as... Well, I think the thing is the second-hand price has come down so much. The new price has come down so much, the secondhand ones actually don't seem that good of a value in that colour. But you can pick them up for as low as £400.
Wow. That's
not a lot of money. That is not a lot of money.
That is less money than a classic vibe Stratocaster.
I did see, and I've forgotten the channel now, but there was a person on YouTube who was like modding PRSs, Silver Sky specifically, and making like dual humbucker versions and HSS versions versions. And I was like, oh man, they look really cool. So I don't know what they're like underneath the scratch plate, but they could make a good modding guitar for not a lot of money, I think.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the world's first true guitar string custom shop. The thing that I love most about Stringjoy is just their attention to detail, their dedication to making their strings the best in the world. And that's a labour-intensive task that they don't shy away from. Stringjoy are also innovative. They're always looking for new ways to make strings better. As guitar players, we've become so used to all the shortfalls of commercially available strings that we stopped even looking for them to be better, last longer, intonate well, easily. Stringjoy bring all of that to every pack of strings they make, and they're available almost as readily as any other generically made guitar string. Stringjoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock Stringjoy yet, ask them to.
But yeah, I'm it's kind of a big small announcement from PRS, because it's going to be new models, it's updated lines, you know, more colors of the Silver Sky, but I think the big thing is those buttons.
The buttons,
believe the buttons it or not, it's thing. The buttons.
Okay, well let's talk about Fender then. Let's move on to Fender, the big brand that aren't at NAMM, and they've released a whole bunch of stuff. They announced new Gretsch models, new Charvel models. They announced some pedals, some Squires, and most importantly, it is the 70th anniversary of the Stratocaster. This is 70th anniversary of the Stratocaster.
It feels like only yesterday we were talking about the 60th.
We are getting to a point where those old guitars are going to be beyond playable. You know, it's we're coming to that time. Stuff
we're coming
that is
to a point,
high value now is about to lose money when people realize that old wood that is 70 years old is...
I think it's just mad. I mean, I know you can buy guitars now. If you bought a 100-year-old guitar now, it's an acoustic. You know, there's Martins out there that are like 100 years old. But we're actually going to live, me and you, Joe, providing, you know, touch wood, nothing happens. We're actually going to live in an age where you could potentially play a Strat that is 100 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty bonkers, isn't it? That is pretty bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, they're simple. You know, guitars, especially Fenders, were always built to be simple. Modular.
Yeah.
So it's sort of conceivable that you can just keep them going. I mean, obviously, they could end up a bit like Trigger's Broom, which is a great reference for older English people, where you've changed things so many times, it's not really the original guitar. But yeah, we're 70 years on. 70 years on from the founding of Fender. That is incredible.
Well, not the founding of Fender, the Stratocaster.
Oh, the start of the Strat, sorry. Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, that's amazing. You can play, you could potentially play a 70-year-old instrument now. I'm not a fan of the colours, though, Joe, I must admit.
So I'll tell you what they've done, dear listener. They've introduced two 70th anniversary models. They've introduced the Mexican-made player model, which they're doing in a finish called Nebula Noir. That's another new color, rather than for the 70th anniversary doing an original color. Don't get me started. And the USA made American Professional 2, which they're giving, again, nothing to do with how it was originally. They're doing a flame maple top. There are standard spec players and Pro 2 models with an anniversary two-color sunburst as well. So that's at least they are doing them. They are doing them. The player still, it's great that they've done the player in a two-color sunburst with the white guard, but they haven't gone vintage tint on the neck, and so it doesn't really look like an old Strat, you know. And I know that's because they're doing those things on the Professional 2. The Professional 2, they've gone for a parchment guard, lovely aged, you know, sort of yellow buttons and pickups, and the gorgeous vintage tint neck. Certainly the Professional 2, the US Professional 2, looks absolutely wonderful. Two-color sunburst. It's the best sunburst, and it looks fantastic on a 50s-style Strat. I wish they'd done more with the player in its original finish, personally.
I love the finish. The Nebula Noir, because it's like a black sparkle.
Yes, it's a very nice finish.
But I think the choice of pick guard is very wrong.
Perloid pick guard with black pickups.
It's just
is what they've gone for.
I just think,
in the face to the memory of the Stratocaster that guitar is. Probably the worst looking Strat Fender have ever put together, that's their 70th anniversary model.
Gen Z slapping the boomers right in the face. Because there is, you know, it's a modern guitar, obviously, of a 70-year-old design. So you've got 2-point trem, you've got the pure vintage 59 single coils in there, you've got a 9.5-inch radius, so it's much more modern. For me, I just think I love the idea of the pickups, I love the sound of those pickups. Mm-hmm. I just think the black hardware would work if it was a different colored plate.
Just a black guard would have been fine.
Yeah, I just think black guard and then white pickups would have looked quite cool. or all black. I just think the perloid is like perloid and sparkle. It's a really tricky combination to get right. Because, I mean, I had a gold sparkle guitar with a perloid scratch plate, and it kind of worked because they were very, very similar. But a white perloid guard is very stark against a very deep black body.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I hate to use this word, Joe, but it kind of makes it look cheap, in my opinion.
It does. It does. Also, what's weird is the 70th anniversary is the Platinum Jubilee. I just feel like they could have lent into that. I don't want an old Platinum Strat. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying something like just some weird.
Do they
glitter black
honor
Strat,
the same things in America to the UK in terms of Platinum?
Yeah,
Jubilee?
Yeah. I think it's the same. I think those. Yeah, I think it's just how it is, yeah.
But, you know, don't forget, they've also, if you go to Fender.com, you go to new, they've also announced a Fender Spaghetti Wavy Checker logo t-shirt for $25.99. I think, actually, Joe, while we're on it, can we quickly, I know this wasn't on your agenda specifically, but we should talk about, because actually there was quite a cool release from Fender. I know we were talking about it, over chat, Joe.
Oh no!
Yeah, but I do want to mention, because I think this is, you know, we're going to get asked about this, Joe. We are the Guitar Nerds. We are the number one guitar based podcast.
Come on, then. Get it over with.
We should talk about the Fender Switchboard Effects Operator. So me and Joe have been talking about this weekend, kind of divided on the color, but I actually think feature wise. I think this is going to be fairly good for them. So this is basically their take on a gig rig ESA effect.
It's
switches.
An ES5.
Well, it's an ES5, basically. Yeah. It's an ES5, so five loops, four switches. So you've got five banks. You've got six switches. You've got up and down, but it's got a full color screen on it.
The screen's very nice. The screen is in the style that they've had on like their GT stuff for the last little while, as well as that.
Is it the same screen as the... Is it a smaller screen than what's on the... It'll be smaller than the Tonemaster.
It's much smaller than the Tonemaster. The Tonemaster has a massive... It's like a phone on the Tonemaster Pro. That's one of the big things, is how big their screen is. But this is the same as like their GT Mustang stuff, with that style screen with like the blue, the black, and the grey colour palette, and then having one large knob that's pressable as well, and it's notched so that you can flick through everything. I actually really like that, their operating system and how it's controlled. Some real thought has gone into controlling everything with that one large knob. And so I've got a lot of time for that. I actually really liked the Mustang stuff. You know, that stuff was all brilliant. The problem that it had was it wasn't Katana, but it was very, very good. And I think bringing that to something like this, who decided to make it gold though? Matt, when I saw this, I messaged Mark Packham immediately, because I thought it was wood. I thought it was like a light maple. I thought they were leaning into that.
No,
it's
anodized gold, isn't it? It's anodized, brushed gold.
How did this, like, who thought of that, first of all? Like, where did that even occur in someone's brain? And then how did that idea then get verbalized? And then other people at Fender agreed with it, to the point that it was built and manufactured. This would be a fine product if it was any other finish on planet Earth.
I think you're being a bit harsh, but I think for me, it makes me think, you know, my background at Boss, it makes me think of acoustic products, because a lot of our products are that. I guess it's a similar finish to some of their other products, that sort of anodized brushed finish.
Yeah, it's the same as their pedals, isn't it? Someone posted on Guitar Nerds, like, you know, a picture of it as soon as it came. Oh, it was Yogi, and Yogi said this will get dirty very quickly, was the comment that he
I think he's not wrong there. One thing that's interesting, which I didn't realize until sort of just reading a bit deeper about it now, co-designed with Ron Minnelli. Lots of people are going to go, who's Ron Minnelli? It's the same
as me. Minnelli?
Ron Minnelli is the guy behind RJM, and RJM are one of the industry leaders in switching, RJM Music Technology. So they make things like the effects gizmo, which is like the rack mount switcher. They've made like the MIDI gizmo, the Mastermind GT. They make loads of pedal boards for famous people, and they've designed all their own systems. So they've basically got a professional designer to come in and basically build it with higher quality buffers. Obviously, you're adding in the screen, the editor mode and stuff like that. I mean, it's £419.
Yeah.
So I think anyone getting into switching, there aren't that many cheap switching options. You've got the ES5 and then you've basically got this.
The ES5 is less money though. Well, certainly it goes for less money secondhand. And there are always
ES5 it's about £399. So yeah, they're kind of about the same price. £419, £399.
I got a little switcher, a programmable switcher for £99 yesterday. I got a Hotone one. I wanted one of the little strip ones to go at the front of a Metro pedal board.
Yeah, I got one of the Chameleon. I can't remember what the company is now, but I bought a similar thing, which I haven't used. It's been sat in the drawer for ages. But yeah, there's some strip ones that kind of are nice and simple. I think this one's going to be... I mean, it's got MIDI on it, which is a massive plus. Obviously, you can control external gear. So no doubt it's going to be sort of relatively popular, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if we ever talked about these, but I didn't realize they made pedal boards as well, Joe. Fender have a professional pedal board in three sizes. I don't know if we've ever talked about that, but yeah, they've got like a anodized like steel metal pedal board.
Oh.
Anodized aluminium chassis pedal board. I didn't know that. But there you go. That's something new every day.
Pedalboard.
Not even new.
It is under new releases, isn't it?
Is it?
The professional pedalboard? Maybe not.
But there you go. But anyway, well, I just wanted to mention the switchboard because I'm sure people are going to ask.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, they're the kind of the really big things for now. There's been a lot of, and we're not the synth podcast, but there's been a lot of announcements in the synth world as well, which is quite interesting. Korg are like, you know what everyone loved 20 years ago? The Micro Korg. You know what we're going to make? The Micro Korg. So they're basically making a new Micro Korg. So look out for that as well.
Dude, Korg,
they're obviously part of the same thing. Yeah.
They've released that new, they've made a new version of the Vox Apache or whatever it was called.
I mean, you know, you talk about crazy ideas, Joe. You know what people want? The Apache. You know what people, what we're going to make? The Apache. It was just like, no one wants a guitar with a built-in speaker.
It's so good. What you're talking about, dear listener, if you're not, I'm trying to find an article on it.
APC-1. It has 33 inbuilt rhythms. I don't know. I don't know, Joe. I think it's no gear of the year.
No,
I don't think that's going to be gear of the year. No, I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry.
Okay. Fair enough.
What should we go for next, Joe? Is there anything else want to cover from now?
Squire are the next thing that I wanted to talk about. Yeah. I was still trying to find the Premier Guitar website at the moment. Honestly, if they squeeze any more banner ads onto that page, like I literally can't click on anything because if you move your mouse, it hovers something that changes the crop of the page. Oh, it's just the worst. Great, you know, they're good at getting press releases out, you know, quick, but website. God, it annoys me. Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Isotope and Native Instruments, two companies who provide the bulk of the recording and editing tools used by Guitar Nerds. If you have a home studio or if you're thinking about getting into demo recording from home, then Isotope and Native Instruments provide the tools that you need to make premium quality recordings with ease and with virtually no equipment other than your guitar and laptop. Isotope make all the voice editing and audio repair tools that I use for the podcast each week, and Native Instruments Guitar Rig 7 is one of the best, most comprehensive collections of virtual effects and guitar amplifiers available anywhere. Use discount code NERDS10 on any product in the Isotope and Native Instruments catalogue for 10% off their fantastic range of tools. So Squire have actually had quite a good little time as well. They've released a bunch of stuff in the classic vibe. I really like the 60s Stratocaster. Shame to not see Squire doing something, but I guess it's the Fender Strat that is the 70th anniversary. Yes. Squire Classic Vibe 60s Strat in HSS, where the humbucker is in a lovely chrome cover and matching headstock Pelham blue. Not Pelham blue, obviously, Lake Placid blue. That's a very cool Strat. They've also done it in like a honey burst as well. Sienna Sunburst, I think, is what they call that.
Sienna Sunburst, yes. Sienna Sunburst. Well, you know, my feelings on Sunburst, I'm not a massive fan of that one, but I am a fan, Joe. This is absolutely rocking for me. I would 100% own and play one of these. They have done a Classic Vibes 60s custom in satin Dakota Red.
It is. We're talking about the Telecaster.
We're talking about the telly. Sorry. Classic Vibe 60s custom telly in satin Dakota Red for 429 Great British pounds. Same C-shaped neck, 9.5-inch radius.
Vintage lacquer frets. Maple board.
I'm in, Joe, for that. Yeah. I love Dakota Red. I think it's a great colour. I think with that vintage tint neck and board, it just looks cool. That's going to wear really cool. That's going to be a future classic. Loads of people are going to want one of those.
I agree. It's absolutely lovely. Dakota Red is one of the best Fender colors. I've got a lot of time for it. It looks fantastic in this makeup. The price is okay. I mean, we know that Classic Vibe stuff is getting expensive, but it's still, you're getting a lot of guitar there.
You're getting a lot of guitar.
But I think the big one really from this range is the Classic Vibe 60s Telecaster SH. So humbucker in the neck, matching headstock, Sherwood green with a torque guard. That is awesome. That is awesome. $449 US, rosewood neck, torque guard, Sherwood green body and headstock, humbucker in the neck. This is the perfect guitar to buy. Get some great custom shop pickups. Not necessarily Fender custom shop. Go to a great pickup builder and get some awesome pickups shoved in there. That's going to be an amazing guitar.
How did they make that guitar cheaper than the Classic Vibe 60s custom Tele? £409, which I just sort of find amazing. But they do it in black or Sherwood green. I think the black looks very cool.
The black is very cool because it's black guard matching.
Although I would like black torque guard. And then get rid of the bridge pickup, just a neck pickup. Get rid of the control plate. You've got the world's weirdest Esquire. I'm in. Yeah. I think that's Squire, man. Just some great ideas, great guitars. Even Joe, for me, the jazz bass, the mid 60s jazz bass they've done in Olympic White with matching headstock is awesome.
It's probably the least adventurous of their releases, because you can already get an Olympic White Squire Classic Vibe jazz bass, but you can't get it with the matching headstock, and of course you have the bound neck with this mid 60s one, which does look very cool. Bound necks with dot inlays. This is a connoisseur's choice. That is if you're gonna invest in a jazz bass at the moment, few things are gonna be cooler than that.
Yeah, that is you cannot play that bass unless you're wearing like a suit. You need to look. You've got to look the part to play that bass. But that is that's cool. Again, Squire, man. They got it all right.
God, I love that brand so much. Think about how far that company's come since we were kids, Matt. I remember like buying my first Affinity P bass in red. Like, you know, it wasn't, the color didn't even have a name. It was just red. You know, I remember how rubbish it was. And now you look at, like, I appreciate they still do Affinity now, and I'm sure Affinity's still relatively basic, but it feels like it's come on a long way. What an amazing way to spend 450 quid right there. When we were kids, all you could get for 450 quid, if you were lucky, was a Mexican in a standard color, you know.
Yeah. Can we also talk about, Joe, just while we're on kind of new releases from that brand, I think we should also very quickly, only because I've been served about three different articles for the deluxe wooden amplifier stand.
Oh, they love it. It's just everywhere in all the news articles about it.
Everywhere. So Fender, and hey, I get it. And actually, I think it's kind of cool. We talked about, Joe, if you remember, probably in December time, we talked about Amazon products that basically look very similar to this, but are way cheaper, that are just like metal frames with a bit of foam.
Etsy products, yeah.
Etsy products. And I get it. Like, I think that amp furniture we've talked about several times before. I can't remember the brand now, but there's a brand that make those kind of really flash guitar stands, and they stack on top of each other, or you can have a workbench on top. And I just think that, like, guitar furniture is certainly a thing that people want when they're kind of melding it into their sort of home aesthetic.
Yeah.
So they've kind of announced a wooden hanging guitar stand, which is very similar to those super expensive wooden stands that came out from some sort of boutique company a few years ago. They're doing a triple guitar stand where the guitars sit staggered back from each other.
That's really nice.
That is really nice. It's expensive, but it's wood, so I get it. It's the deluxe wooden amplifier stand.
That's the big one. £285 and 99.
I mean, they're actually saying it's their own line of gear furniture, so we're probably going to see a lot more of this. But it is effectively an amp stand made out of wood with a drawer underneath, which I just really like. I just think it's good. It's an elegant walnut finish.
Well, for £59.99, I bought a big wooden box off of Amazon, which my amps
just wrote Fender on it.
No, but my amps are just sitting on that, and it was much cheaper. But you know,
I also noticed that they spelt included wrong. Customizable EVA foam padding included.
Included.
But, I just think there's a lot of people out there that want this kind of thing and do want it for your living room or whatever. I think they put, like, it looks like they've put a Mustang on it.
Yeah.
Like a Fender. I'm like, why wouldn't you put, like, a twin or something on it?
Is the stand more expensive than that amplifier?
I think it probably is. But I think it's cool. I think it's very cool. Although the one article I did read, when you could just buy a Boss BSA-1.
Which would also work. Polymath used that. Tim has his jazz chorus just sat on the BAS-1.
You know, amp stands are no new thing. But I think the advantage of this one, and I don't know, I could be talking out my ass, Joe, but you might notice when you use an amp stand, you lose a lot of bass because you're taking it off the floor. It doesn't resonate in the same way, where you've got it's connecting to a lot more material that's connecting to the floor. I think it's going to project a little bit more bottom end, and some amp stands you do lose that. I think perhaps that's also become, they become very directional. But yeah. It's not cheap, £285.
Big money.
But, you know, we've seen guitar stands way more expensive than that.
Sure.
People own amps way more expensive than that. And if you only own one amp and it's in your living room and you want it to look nice, then there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Absolutely. It's definitely cheaper than a lot of the boutique stuff.
Yeah. Indeed.
Matt, indeed. Speaking of something you mentioned just now has made me want to talk about this thing. Do you remember before we started podcasting, I said to you, oh, I've got a secret story that I want to tell you on the podcast. You were trying to get me to tell you before. Well,
yes.
NAMM's round the corner, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so Ashdown, we're prepping all the new gear, right? We've got the amps, we've got the basses, there's some pedals, everything's getting ready to go. And I was up there the other day and I was like, how many of these amps have we made? Because we've misspelt the name on the front. And this is for people watching.
Hold on.
This is for people watching the podcast on the front of the yet to be released.
Oh, no.
Amps. It says It says original 500. Supposed to be the original.
But
fortunately, it was just one. It was just the prototype. So I was like, can I have it? So they've let me.
Excellent.
So there you go. So I've got the one original Ashdown amplifier, and that is still is. There you go. If you want to, if you know, breaking a little embargo, this is due out on whenever Thursday. That is the new. I said 500. It's 300. I think this one. It's a little 300 watt Class D amplifier. It looks great. Lovely little chassis. Really smart. 5 bands of EQ. You know, all the things you want, a really high quality DI out, which is what matters. And then, you know, that Ashdown shape button, which basically scoops out your mids, which I do not like.
I just want the Interstellar 600. That is the amp. That's the Ashdown amp for me.
The Guy Pratt one. It's great. It's huge. And it's very cool.
It's very cool. But there you go. So you've got your own organal.
Organal, yeah.
Organal Ashdown.
That's my favorite thing. Dear listener, also worth noting, actually, again, if you're we are releasing these podcasts on YouTube as well to watch, if you care about watching me and Matt talking to a microphone for an hour. But this is something just for the viewers. At the moment, KMA machines are, we're doing a little giveaway on the Instagram. You know, I get to do the Instagram stuff, so I keep putting together giveaways so that I can give you lovely people stuff. KMA have got a pedal coming out on Thursday at the start of NAMM, a big new pedal, and there's a giveaway on Instagram to guess what that pedal is, what type of effect. I've given some clues. There's basically a picture of it on a pedal board, and the position on the pedal board and how it's cabled is your clue as to what it is. But I thought, for people watching, I'd give you another clue, because I've got one of the pedals here. Thought I'd
give
you
another
clue.
I'm going to reveal it.
Yeah. Well, I thought what I'd do is show you all the back of the pedal. That is the pedal from the back. And I wonder how I can do this. This is... I hope you're really careful. Savvy Joe. And that is some of the inputs and outputs on the side, on one of the sides of the pedal. So there you go. That's a little bit of a clue. If you want to enter, go to the KMA Instagram and have a little guess at what that pedal is.
Nice.
But we're coming towards the end of the podcast, dear listener. Matt and I will, of course, be heading over to patreon.com/guitarnerds. We're going to talk about more stuff this week. I failed to mention this at the start, but this week we'll probably talk about some of the pedals that I got sent this week. But also, we had a great question from Josh Chudley on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to do with... selling off a bunch of his gear for store credit, which is a terrible idea. And now he's got to decide what to do amplifier-wise with his store credit. So limited to new and available now amplifiers at full price. But Matt and I will be talking...
His credit is only available for new amplifiers at full price.
Well, I just meant, you know... he can't use the pre-owned market is what I meant.
Oh, right. I was like, so we won't do you a deal. You can only pay full price on it. I was like, Josh, you have been wildly screwed over.
No, yeah, that's quite what I meant. But yeah, we're gonna deal with that. But yeah, so I got a whole bunch of stuff, Matt, that I picked up. I got the new Diamond bass compressor, which is unbelievably good. There's going to be some stuff, I think, the week after next. JD Short and I are doing a podcast, so I'll probably do some bass stuff there, but it's unbelievably good, the Diamond bass compressor back. I also got the tremolo, the Diamond tremolo, which is very good. I got the Meris LVX, the Earthquaker Devices Avalanche Run, which is the pedal I used to own, got again. I got the pedal you wanted to talk about, Matt, is the Universal Audio Lion.
I did indeed. I want to talk about that very much.
It's a great I mean, you said yourself, the problem with the UA Lion, the only thing it's got going against it is the price tag.
Yes.
Because it is an expensive pedal. Yes, it is a near £400
drive pedal. But that's fine.
Preamp pedal.
Well, yeah. It's a bit of everything, isn't it? But we can talk about that. We can talk about that in the Patreon, perhaps. Okay.
Yes, yeah. Let's talk about that in the Patreon, because as we're coming to the end, I want to talk a little bit about the LVX before we go. The Meris Audio LVX, a pedal that I don't think, because we never got any of the, we didn't get the LVX or the new...
The Reverb X.
The new Reverb, the Mercury X.
Mercury X.
Because we never got either of those, I feel like over the last couple of gear of the years, we haven't really shouted about these pedals very much. I also felt, and I said it on Gear of the Year when we were talking about the Mercury X, is like, this is a great product. I just feel like really high, really expensive, really this does everything ambient pedals is just a bit of a trodden path now. There are lots of brands that do it. I guess it's probably a personal thing. It's just because it's not especially something that I would use. But I was incredibly impressed. The interface is very usable, really easy to get your head around. The 4 foot switches are very intuitive as well to allow you to turn on and off certain parts of a patch. The rotary controls are very hands-on, so even though you're loading up presets, you've immediately got control of all the things that you kind of want to control on those delay lines. And it's got so much stuff on there, from like octave reverbs to ambient stuff, to modulating things, to sort of beat based delays. And then it's got all the classic stuff that you want, all the tape sounds. I mean, I appreciate you don't need to spend £600 on a delay pedal to get a Bucket Brigade style delay, but it does those sounds really, really well as well.
I think I think it was good that we had Blake on board, but I think we, for Gear of the Year before last, but I think we probably didn't do it justice, because I think, as you said, with the Mercury X, it isn't just a reverb pedal. It is way more than that.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of their pedals realistically in one, base centered around building reverbs. So, you know, it's, I think it's good that you got it, because you can give it some time. You know, we can really sort of understand it a little bit more and get a bit more out of it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm keen to give it a go at some point. Definitely keen to give it a go at some point.
Yes. Yeah. I will send it up to you afterwards. But I recorded a little demo, dear listener, for this week, a little ambient demo. There are two guitars running sort of left and right panned at all times, using different patches, and they change throughout. It's just about a minute and a half of an ambient track working around the same three chords. But great tone, so easy to use. I literally unboxed this, plugged it straight in, opened up a door. I spent 5 minutes with this pedal before I recorded it, and that's testament to how easy it is to use for something that is actually so complicated. Here is the track.
Thank you.
There you go. That is the...
Totally sold, Joe. Totally sold.
It's very good. Very good. All lovely glitches and ambience and surprisingly controllable. You know, when I see a pedal with a screen and only like a handful of knob controls on there, and I just thought it was going to be more complicated than it was. And I'm sure you can deep dive into a lot of those things, obviously, and create and craft delay tones however you
was
want.
It, but- was the kind of like, there's a bit when you came in with like some tremolo picking and it has like really reverberated. Was all that sort of reverb and stuff in there? As,
yeah, yeah, that's all. Well? That's all on there as well. It's kind it's of just got amazing. Some preamp stuff on there as well. So you can get like a just a little bit of gain on the front of those delay tails as well. It's so much more than just a delay. It's kind of a bit of a multi-effects geared yeah. around delay as its main thing.
It had, you know, big... You know, dare I say, microcosm vibes. I could definitely see it being really useful. Absolutely, really, really useful. So, yeah, keen to see what more comes out of it, and maybe a update from you in a couple of weeks, Joe. And if you get bored of it, send it my way.
I will. I will indeed.
Now that I'm in my new kind of small space, I think I can actually probably get my pedal board and an amp in here, which is going to be the next thing. So I'm hoping that I can start having a bit of guitar fun again and bring my pedal board out. That's the plan.
Well, there we go. Yeah. Well, Matt and I are going to head over to Patreon, dear listener. But before we go, I just want to thank our top tier, our $10 tier patrons for their continued support in making all of this possible. Thank you very much to Nicholas Strom, to Rocket Rob Patterson, to Phil Sadler, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, John Conaway, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Hizal Kadawaki, Eric File, Peter Peche, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dore, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravit.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you to everyone who's tuned in to listen. Don't forget, you can watch us on YouTube each week as well. We're heading over to the Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where Matt and I are going to talk about more of the pedals I've got and a question or two from the Facebook group. Do join us there. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.